Would you believe that the Mona Lisa is being sold in an online auction that ends on the 18th of June? Well, probably not, but a Mona Lisa is up for online auction by Christie's, no less, in Paris. Raymond Hecking spent decades trying to convince the world that the Mona Lisa painting he bought from a French antique shop in 1953 was the real thing. And even though it's not, it's expected to fetch close to $500,000 when the online auction being run by Christie's in Paris ends on the 18th of June. The pandemic, of course, has affected everything, but on the roundtable today, we thought we'd discuss the impact that it's had on the market for art and other collectibles around the world, and particularly in Australia. There are over 300,000 businesses operating in the global art market and the antiques market as well, directly employing about 2.9 million people. The New Zealand auction house Webbs says its auction sales have doubled in recent months and that more investors are choosing art over property. But the recent UBS and Art Basel Art Market Report Global said art sales fell 22% in 2020, the steepest market drop since the GFC. We've got a top panel this morning to discuss what's been happening in the world of art during a time of pandemic. Our guests have had to grapple with the swift technological and social change in both the local and international markets. And we welcome, firstly, Amanda Love, philanthropist, collector, and an expert in contemporary art. Welcome to the roundtable, Amanda.
Thank you very much.
Great. And John Albrecht joins us as well. John's the Managing Director and Head of Collections at Leonard Joles, an auction house that's been operating for over a century since 1919. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. And we were hoping to have Tim Olson of the Olson Gallery this morning, but I think he might be online trying to bid for the Mona Lisa, so we haven't been able to track Tim down yet. So I might come to you, John, and ask you if you can give us a bit of background to this story about what, the Hecking Mona Lisa, how it's up for sale, and what do you think it'll fetch?
Look, my first comment would be, I think it's sort of art as spectacle, really. And I think in this day and age, and particularly the last probably quarter of a century, where art has sort of, to some degree been infected by this concept of value and blockbuster results, my suggestion would be that it's going to bring a good deal more. Another copy of the work brought, I think, a million plus in recent years. And I think when you've got the likes of Banksy's shredded artwork bringing fortune on internationally and these sort of spectacular results, I'm sure Christie's are expecting an equally spectacular result for this work.
Is the Hecking Mona Lisa a good copy?
Absolutely, but the reality is there are a number of very good copies, and this has led to the conjecture. I mean, I remember visiting the Louvre in the late 90s with my late father to see the Mona Lisa in the flesh, and was completely underwhelmed because I was sort of battling with 300 people around me pushing me around.
Can get a bit crowded in there, that's true.
And but the reality is, I mean, for so long, for indeed more than a century, there's always been that wonderful speculation that is the one hanging there the real one or not, because there was a period there where a real one wasn't hanging there and was rediscovered. So that just sort of adds to the mystique of the work.
Indeed, indeed. John Albrecht, we said in the introduction that, the New Zealand house Webb says its auctions have doubled in recent months. What's your sort of sense of how the pandemic has affected things for Leonard Joles and more broadly the art and collectibles market?
Look, I think if I was to speak domestically, I'd say that it's been a really pleasing period after a period of fear that we all experienced in March of last year. Like to Skype, but the reality is that the travel dollars are trapped in this country now. It's sort of the fin called recently the AFR, the gilded cage effect, where all this money is here that's not being spent on travel and experience.
Right. So interesting.
There's no that people are moving back tangible and building their houses with things on a scale that I haven't seen for probably 20 years. So I think I don't like to Skype, but the market is wonderful domestically for us.
No worries, John. I'll keep touching wood if you can too. And John, I might just mention that you were sounding just really loud and clear earlier on, but the lines just dropped back a little bit. So wherever you were at the beginning of the conversation, if you could head back there, that would be great. But I'll come on to now.
I haven't moved.
You haven't moved a thing. Well, there you go. Excellent. Well, whatever it is, we'll keep our fingers crossed for the rest of the round table. Thanks very much. That's John Albrecht, Managing Director and Head of Collections for Leonard Giles. If I could come on to you now, Amanda Love, as I mentioned, that UBS and Art Basel report found that fairs accounted for 43% of art dealer sales in 2019, but then was down to 22% in 2020, and about half of that income was from digital events. What's your assessment of the way the pandemic has changed the way that art and other collectibles are being sold?
Oh, well, I mean, exactly, as you said, it's a shift to online sales. I mean, as you rightly said, the market went down by about 22% in the 2020 year, but the online sales went up something by over 500%. And so while that shift was ready to happen, I mean, the art world had already been dabbling with the digital realm. In the pandemic just completely accelerated that, and now digital fluency is just regarded as the norm.
It's interesting. I would have thought particularly, with non-digital artworks, that actually being there in the room, seeing it, being able to make an assessment would be so important to what you're willing to spend. But now people are having to buy remotely and therefore sort of sight unseen, at least in person. How does that change things, Amanda?
Well, I mean, and there is absolutely that idea of the aura of the original, which is, and there's a whole lot of academic study, especially around the Mona Lisa, but and nothing beats the aura of the original, and that's why people want to buy art, because they want to have that work for themselves in their own space predominantly. But in the absence of the ability to have that, and with digital acuity becoming second nature, especially to a millennial generation, that's the next best thing. And that's totally effective. And also now there are so many ways to convey digital images, and also to convey the condition of works, which is obviously a big issue when you haven't seen the work yourself. But I mean, it's easy to get a very good video, a very close-up video of the whole work sent to you immediately, you know, a video of the work in the round, which actually does convey as closely as possible the effect of being there in the room. There's all kinds of online platforms which use artificial reality to make you feel like you are in the room with the work and able to walk around the work. There's an amazing site called Vortic, which enables galleries to put their platforms into a virtual realm, which allows the viewer as closely as possible just to feel like they are in the gallery, walking around an exhibition, walking up close to works, walking back, and even taking that work and putting them in their own home virtually an app that does that.
That's
quite extraordinary.
Absolutely fascinating. That's Amanda Love, art advisor and independent curator on the roundtable today, where we're discussing the impact of COVID-19 on the art and collectibles market. And I'm pleased to say that we've also been joined now by Tim Olson, owner of the Olson Gallery. Welcome to the roundtable, Tim.
Oh, good morning. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you on such a beautiful day.
Indeed, and a pleasure to be speaking with you, Tim. Could you perhaps give us a bit of an outline of your assessment of the impact of COVID-19 on the Olson Gallery and your thoughts on the impact on the broader market generally as well?
Well, I mean, I don't really have to talk about my gallery. I can talk about many, many galleries. I was completely pessimistic when I heard that COVID had just started. I thought, my gosh, everyone's going to close up shop and we're all going to be sort of in hibernation and, nothing's going to happen, economically for anybody. But what I found was, there are two ways of thinking with this. You know, you can think esoterically or you can think I suppose, the fact that economically people weren't spending their money anywhere else. I don't know whether – sorry, I couldn't get through before. But
no, you're right.
I don't know what anyone else has said, but people weren't, you know, taking holidays to Aspen or Mykonos or, you know, the cashed up Australian.
Yes, I think John Albrecht mentioned that, and it's interesting. Yeah, that's definitely been the case for you, Tim Olson.
So, yeah, well, I mean, no disrespect to Alan Joyce, but we were getting the money that Qantas wasn't. You know?
Well, I hope Alan's not too worried to hear that this morning.
no, but don't worry, we'll all be back on those planes as soon as we can. I mean, I couldn't think of anything better than being in Italy right now. But I think the other thing is that, you know, it was a real reset for people to, in a sense, have to be introspective and sort of confront themselves and really kind of think about what their lives are really worth. And people sort of were seeking more substance in their existence.
That's interesting. So perhaps unexpectedly, has this time been a, you know, we've heard about the impact of COVID-19 on the live performance industry and stuff, but has the art sector and Australian artists in particular fared better?
I had a record year last year, put it that way. Mm.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't want to sound boastful or anything, but, I had some couple of blue chip artists that exhibited with me, which did help. Mm. But with the property boom as well, people were renovating or buying or creating new environments. People were spending time at home and they were looking at that wall saying, you know, what can we put there that sort of expresses more about us? You know, what metaphors can we bring into the house that makes the house more interesting? And, you know, people have turned away from bookshelves to wanting to buy a piece of art.
Yeah.
That ultimately is a kind of metaphor for their own lives and an object that's in essence expresses a part of them. And I think in this time, which I think really is a kind of reawakening that's been forced upon us by, you know, what nature has created through this pandemic, is in a sense that we have to look towards optimism in some way to find things that give us hope. And a lot of people have really realised that art does add substance to a house, but it's also a reflection of our deeper selves and our own deeper thinking.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
It's been incredible, and it still seems to be continuing.
Right.
I mean, it's not as hot as it was last year, but it's still very good. But having been in this business now all my life, but having been a commercial gallerist now for 30 years, I'm celebrating 30 years of my gallery next year, to see the broadening of the art market, to see young people engaging, to see the way museums and the amount of art consultants, the amount of galleries, it's just so exciting to see what a cultural country we're becoming.
That's great. Thanks very much, Tim Olson. I'd like to come back to you now, John Albrecht, to pick up a couple of points that we've heard from our other guests. Tim just mentioned the broadening of the art market, and I wondered whether your experience has been that there's a different type of buyer and perhaps whether it's broadening as well. And I was also interested to know whether, Amanda's comments about, I forget the name of that app, but it sounds amazing, the technology that can be used to sort of give you a sense of what an artwork might be like in your place. What sort of technological changes you've seen at Leonard Joel's that might have been accelerated by the pandemic?
Look, I think, and good question, to go to your first point, I think there's been, for me, I think there's been a structural shift in the buyers. I feel like there are new buyers in the marketplace that literally, in the online environment, discovered businesses and galleries and auction houses and the like that they hadn't discovered physically before, which sounds odd in a way. But, I mean, there are barriers to auction houses and galleries. People still are psychologically intimidated by them. That is still something that sort of pervades our approach and thinking around galleries and art. But I think, you know, my experience was that there were certainly new collectors and new buyers that realised that they could do these things online. And in terms of coping online, I think I could probably speak to that being a Melburnian and just come out of fourth lockdown.
Yes, I suspect you're close to a global expert on that now.
Yeah, well, I think experiencing it similarly to other people, we just conducted a fine art auction and a fine jewellery auction in stage four lockdown with no human contact whatsoever. And both auctions performed beautifully. And to go to Amanda's point, we just literally adopted every technology we could. We were FaceTiming clients. We still hung the exhibition so that we could walk with them in our rooms virtually. Mm. We put more images online. We put images in situ. And I think what we've realised too, I mean, as menacing as this digital world seems to be from some perspectives, in other ways it's truly liberating. And I can tell you that this technology for us during this period has been a godsend, and we've learned from it.
Man, that's really interesting. Amanda Love, I've mentioned a couple of times the art market, but also collectibles more broadly. Are the trends that we're talking about sort of distinguishable by type of art or other collectibles? Could you perhaps sort of break things down a little bit for us in your assessment?
No, well, I can't. I mean, I'm sure John would be able to talk to collectibles. Look, I'm not involved in collectibles at all.
Right.
Only in art. Certainly contemporary art has been a huge beneficiary of current circumstances.
And are you finding that same thing about a different type of buyer coming to the online market because, you know, things have to be done differently now?
Definitely. I mean, there's a saying that the grey surfers or the silver surfers are also quite adept with online transactions. But definitely I think there's a new millennial age group and even Gen Z, I think, which is the next one, coming on board. I think also just to Tim's point about Australia and the acceleration with the Australian market, I think not only is it financially, I think that because people have been locked down here for the last 18 months, people are starting to think about Australia in a different way and thinking about Australia and as it relates to the world and actually travelling more here, perhaps learning more about it. And I think that that's sort of also promoting a shift towards local art, whereas previously I think certainly with my practice there was, say, 80% or say 70% of that at least would be to do with international art and international sales, whereas that's probably swapped now to maybe 40%, you know, international, 60% Australia.
That's interesting. And are you finding that overall the volume is sort of equivalent, or has there been a drop off in your direct experience, Amanda?
No, the volume has actually increased for me. Same with Tim.
Wow.
I'm busier now than I've been.
There you go.
I also joke that I'm busy now because you have to literally go and sit at your desk every day. There's no hiding on aeroplanes or blaming jet lag for spending 6 months travelling around the world.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing how much working every day, all that happen to work all the time generates.
That's really fascinating. We're talking about the impact of COVID-19 on the roundtable today, and it seems that it's actually been a pretty robust situation in the local art market. And even though everyone's moved online, business is still going pretty well. At this point, I'd like to raise three letters, which I'm almost hesitant to raise because I don't fully have my head around it myself. But John Albrecht, I might come to you. The NFT, the non-fungible token, has been the subject of a lot of media coverage and the sort of transformation of the, and the focus on the unique digital asset in the art market. Could you tell us a little bit about that and whether that's something that your business has been involved in?
Well, I'm going to hand pass this one to Amanda as she did with me collectibles because when someone asked me about 8 weeks ago what an NFT was, I replied with a different acronym because I really...
yeah, right. So the first two letters I can guess the same.
But I will say that we've actually been offered one recently. We're in discussions to offer it. And I love dealing in things that I don't understand, and this is one I don't understand. But we haven't had an experience yet with one, but we expect to be offering one later this year. But without wanting to be lazy, I'll hand
well,
it over.
So there's the handball, Amanda. Do you wish to grab it, or do you want to pass as well?
Yeah, no,
great.
I'm totally
go for
happy
it.
To grab it. Yeah, well, I mean, at the moment, I mean, an NFT is just a digital token which is made unique by attaching it to blockchain, and that enables the establishment of that object, which was just maybe digital object or perhaps not unique. It gives it its special quality and allows it to be traded. So at the moment, it's just like I see an NFT as just like a derivative. It's just a financial instrument which is now attaching itself to the cachet of the art market and the art world to attract a different level of investors. I mean, you're just betting on the market, basically. I mean, so at the moment, it's just purely a financial instrument attaching itself to the art world. But of course, connoisseurship will develop around certain objects. So, you know, Christie's sold the work by the so-called artist Beeple a couple of months ago for $69.3 million. And that really set the scene for NFTs. That's why everyone started talking about NFTs and why the world went crazy. Now there have been a number of sales of NFTs via auction and via a drop. It drops onto the internet and people bid online for a certain period. I think Beeple was paid for in Ethereum, but there are various kinds of cryptocurrency which can be used. But real currency can also be used in some situations. But, I mean, that's the essence of it.
Yeah, fascinating.
Money is a fungible token. A non-fungible token is something which cannot be replaced with something else. And it's the attachment to the blockchain which gives it that ability to be unique. And where that plays out in the art world, just quickly, it'll be amazing for establishing, it's amazing for establishing provenance, which is, we're talking about the Mona Lisa earlier on. Mm. I mean, establishing whether that's real or fake, one of the major methods of doing it is tracing the provenance and establishing from the minute it left the artist's hands, where did it go? Who bought it? Where has it been hiding? Where's it gone? Blockchain gives you an absolutely correct and immediately accessible ability to establish provenance.
Oh, so I suppose that means that the hacking Mona Lisa, there'll be able to be like an NFT to certify that it's a guaranteed fake. That's
there'll be a line of provenance to prove what it is. Mm.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's fascinating. And thank you, Amanda, for taking on the not insignificant challenge of explaining an NFT. I won't double down and ask you to explain how blockchain works either, even though I'd back you to do it after that very good explanation. I might come back to Tim Olson now. Tim, is it a case of NFTs for you, or is it more NFIs?
I've spoken to my father, obviously, who's people call an important living Australian artist.
Yes.
Obviously, his work is highly collectible. It's a solid object. A painting of his is a tangible thing, whereas shares and Bitcoin, whatever, they're all based on hype and hypotheticals. Artwork is solid. Artwork is something. I mean, digital art still sort of wavers for me, but I think we're going to get to a point where people really want to deal with things that actually exist. And Amanda talking about provenance is everything these days. You look what happens at auction houses when a certain person sells their collection. Like, we had a restaurateur, Lucio Galletto, who owned a very famous restaurant in Sydney, who did a lot of swaps with artists. He did an auction, and most of the work went for up to five times its value because of the provenance of who owned it. People get very excited by that they're not just buying something that is an asset, a solid asset, but they're also buying a story.
Yes, and that, and it's interesting that the story can include not just the creation of the artwork, but who's owned it previously and things like that as well.
Right. No, can I segue back a bit?
Please do. We've only got a minute or so, Tim, but go for it.
I had a gallery in New York, which I had to close during COVID, and it was doing so well. I was selling a lot of Indigenous women's art and various things. And what happened was that I had to close it down with COVID. Fortunately, my lease ran out, but everything had to go online. And I'm still selling things in New York online. I do virtual tours. I've got a Google guy with one of those cameras that comes in. You can walk around my gallery and visit every picture. Also, we're doing videos. I sold a sculpture to a guy in Saudi Arabia who I never would have found in the past. So really, in this overall conversation, it's really exciting to find, all these mechanisms that are bringing people into the art market.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Well, look, thanks you very much for joining us, Tim Olsen. It's been great having you on the roundtable today, and a really fascinating discussion as well. Thanks, Tim.
No, thank you very much for including us.
And thanks also to you, John Albrecht, Managing Director and Head of Collections at Leonard Giles. Really interesting to hear about the cutting-edge digital technology, but the way that it's playing out with real objects that we can have in our homes.
Thank you.
And I hope that things continue to go well for you, as they have and over a century now at Leonard Giles. Leonard Giles opening up in 1919. And Amanda Love, art advisor and independent curator, thank you also for rounding off the roundtable with us today and that admirable explanation of an NFT.
It's a pleasure. No, thank you.
Great. Thanks very much. And thanks to everyone for listening today and for your feedback on the text line as well. We had a text in from Janelle who said, great topic on why art's booming in Australia. Why aren't universities and governments supporting this move in the arts? Art is very important for society, says Janelle. And yes, indeed it is. Thanks for your input, Janelle. My name's Julian Morrow, and I look forward to having another chat on the radio next Sunday on Sunday Extra.